Tonight we want to pick up with Romans chapter 6. We'll look at verses 6 and 7. We are at the place where Paul has a lot to say, not only about sin, but he talks about sin and says that if you're a Christian, you have left that life behind. When you think about life, there are a lot of things that we leave behind. As you watch people as they age, they will say, we used to do this. We used to put up a lot of Christmas lights, and now we don't do it anymore. Or we used to eat this candy, and we don't eat it anymore. Or we used to watch this TV show, or we used to go for walks, or we used to bike ride, or we used to be involved with some other activity. And sometimes they forget about those things until that activity or maybe that food is brought to mind, and the person says, oh yeah, we remember that, we used to. Well, this is kind of a used to chapter, especially this section. Let's start with Romans 6, verse 6. He says, knowing this, we'll come back to that in a second, knowing this, that our old man was crucified with him, that the body of sin might be done away, that so we should no longer be in bondage to sin. For he that hath died is justified from sin. Paul says, knowing this, I'm bringing this to your attention. You have been taught this in the past. And he uses the present tense there. This is something that in his mind, the Christians there at Rome should have been continuing to think about. He is still answering the question, shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? That's back at the beginning of the chapter. The answer to that question is no. I gave you the illustration from one Greek professor. He said, may the mother of 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 the thought never be. And that is a good way to express the point that Paul was trying to make. We've already seen the old man introduced in this book. It comes into play in chapter 3 and verse 9. We also saw it in the previous chapter three times, Romans chapter 5, verses 6, 8, and 10. And this is the only place where Paul actually used the word old. You do find that word elsewhere in Scripture. You read, for example, about old clothing, same word, over to Matthew 9 and verse 16. You may remember the old wineskins that Jesus talked about in one of his teachings, Matthew 9:17, and that word old is also used to describe the Old Testament in 2 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 14. When the writers of classical Greek, not the New Testament writers, used that word, it was a word that they used to describe items that were worn out, items that were worthless, items that were unusable. And here, as you look at it, Paul says this way of life that you had, it was worn out. It was not worth anything. It was transitory, subject to distress. It was a useless way to live. Now, I don't know about you, but when I look at people who are not Christians, I don't see that they look at their life generally that way. Do you? Where you think about these old wineskins that nobody wants, you think about this old clothing that nobody wants. People who are not living a Christian life, don't they look at their life and think they haven't made it pretty good? I think most people think, I'm happy with my life. And why would I want to be a Christian? And really, if that means big change, why would I want to go and really stir things up? If I'm going to do that, if you're on the other side of the fence, which I know that you're not, but if you're the non-Christian and you have a Christian come knocking on your door saying, hey, I would like to talk to you about Christianity. I'd like to talk to you about not you stopping the kind of life that you have and completely changing your life. What would you be thinking or asking? Yeah, I think that's the obvious question. Why? Why would I want to do that? Well, you remember what Peter had to say in 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 15 concerning the defense of the gospel? He said, be ready how often? Always. For the hope that lies within you. And that's something that we need. We do have an answer. We've got a really good answer. We've got the right answer. But for people to grasp that, we need to be ready and offer that. Paul says this old way of life, as we were living, you know, lust, the desires that we had, and we were not necessarily bad people, but we were going our own way. He says, what did we do with that old way of life? We, there we go, first part of verse 6, knowing this, that our old man was crucified with him. Well, if you were to make a guess where else that word, that verb crucified is used, anybody want to take a stab at where you'd find it?
Talking about Jesus.
There you go. Same word. So we know what happened when Jesus was crucified. He is affixed. He is nailed. He is attached to the cross. The word also is used in Galatians chapter 2 and verse 20. Here I'll give you the formal definition. It means to be crucified along with or among others being crucified. It describes our response to sin. Now if you think about the Christian life and the Christian's response to sin, do we potentially have a number of responses to sin? We do. Now, we can say, and rightly say, that there's only one right response, but before we get there, what would be some potential wrong responses?
You regret the
way. All right. Yeah. You know, I really want to go back to that. I love that. I miss that. I want that. And that's not just a temptation, but that's where the heart is. My old life is the thing that really gave me joy, peace, and comfort. Well, that's a heart problem. What else? Wrong responses to sin. All right, there could be the indifference. I can take it or leave it. You know, this Christianity is fine, but the old life was fine too. And I'm okay with one or the other. Brian?
Excuse it.
All right. As far as living the old way?
Yeah, it's just...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, God doesn't mind. He's that good, nice, caring, loving God. And he'll be just fine with me not crucifying it. Anything else as far as a wrong approach to sin? Gary?
I'd say envy, especially if a Christian was baptized very young, that they never really had a life outside of the church, and they see others doing it and having a great time.
I think that's a great answer, and for a lot of people who are in that category, that's exactly right. Young people, they grow up and they're thinking, well, you know, my parents are taking me to services and I'm trying to live as a Christian, and I see all these people over there, they talk about the good time that they're having, and yeah, I know that's wrong, but I would sure like to join in. It's tough for young people. It's really rough, but there is that problem of envy. Well, Paul says, if we're going to be a Christian, here's the right attitude. You need to be willing to crucify, to put to death that. One source, this was there, he said it means the extinction of our former corruption. Well, when you start using words like extinction, what comes to mind? I mean, it's out of the picture. It is completely gone. And that corresponds quite well when you think about the word crucify. We're talking about trying to not just tamp that down, not just limit that, but we're talking about actually getting rid of the problem. Now, here is my question based on that. This putting to death, this removal, this getting rid of it, is it mental, is it physical, or is it both? That's question number one. All right, we've got an answer for both. Anybody want to second that?
I do.
Anybody want to oppose that? All right, we agree, and I would conclude with you that that is the correct answer. When we think about crucifying sin, there is a mental aspect to it. There is a physical aspect to it. The follow-up question is this. At least in the majority of cases, which of those two do you think is the most difficult? Mentally crucifying or physically crucifying?
Mental.
Why? It's just so deep.
Yeah.
It's at least where it begins. Now, when you think about the physical aspect of it, how could sin really pull at you physically?
Addiction.
All right. And, you know, you think about the person who's addicted to drugs, there is that physical reaction where my body is calling out for another fix. Or you think about the person who is addicted to alcohol, the body, there's some things happening within the bodily system that there is that, once again, desire. But there's also that mental aspect as well. Gary, you making an adjustment or you wanted to? Okay. Don, and then maybe we had one other comment, or Tim, I think. Don, we'll go to you first.
Are you defining mental as the brain or just the thought process?
I don't know that I could really separate those two, Don.
Okay. Then our actions, everything that we do comes from up here, from our brain. So our physical actions are first activated by our brain.
Yes, I think where I was going as far as with the alcohol, for example, is that there is a reaction in the body that is connected to the mind. So if you wanted to try to weight those, I don't know that I would say that it is always mental, because there could be a sensation from the body or something taking place with our physical being that generates that mental signal. But to me, the mental is where it all comes down to. Because even if the body is generating one thing, the mind is still processing this as far as this is a strong desire that has to be fulfilled, or this is pain, we have to deal with this, those kinds of things.
I agree. Because, you know, the old excuse of the devil made me do it.
Yeah.
It's your brain that made you do it.
That's true.
You can't can't put that on somebody else.
That is true. All right, Tim, and then we'll see what Gary has to say.
I was going
to
say the same thing.
All right, Gary, to you.
A visual relation I use to separate the two, an alcoholic, maybe, there's always that want in his mind until he gets used to not having alcohol to want it. And that is much harder, I would think, to deal with than driving by the club or the bar and not stopping. By going to the club or the bar, that would be a physical thing, but the actually needing to drink or want to drink would be the mental part.
Yeah. And there are things that can be done mentally to, you know, if you're watching a particular program that features some form of liquor, and those are the advertisements that pop up. I mean, the old subliminal advertising we think about with the movies, they were trying to flash pictures of, you know, Pepsi, Coke, popcorn, those kinds of things to stimulate the mind. You're hungry, those kinds of things. And people still do that. You know, good smells. I've never tried it. Dad always said if you're going to sell a house, put a little vanilla on your light bulbs. That way when the buyers come in, they'll have a nice smell. And you could do that with different things, obviously, or bake some chocolate chip cookies. Anybody ever hear the vanilla on the light bulb? Okay, well, maybe that was an Illinois thing, Barb. So, but anyway, if you need to sell a house, get some vanilla and try it out.
Never used vanilla, but went around to all the plugs and put a bunch of apple blossom. Plug-in things, you know? And people would come in there and they'd walk around. You know, you'd see them sniffing, you know?
I've heard of burning vanilla candles or something that's kind of like a cookie dough candle or something like that. It has the same effect.
Yeah. Teresa and I, we walked into it looked like it was a seance. They had candles. And it was not a good house. We were house hunting many years ago, first house, and the realtor said, hey, we got one over here that is really priced right. Yeah, it was priced right. But the stench in there was terrible. But, I mean, it was like a candle every 3 feet and just kind of wacky. So, all right. Anyway, enough of that. All right, let's talk about putting away the body of sin a little bit. When people decide to become a Christian, they say, look, we recognize that we're living in sin. We may, in our estimation, be a pretty good person. We're not doing all kinds of, in our estimation, or even as far as the Bible is concerned, all kinds of terrible things, but we're doing our best at this point to control the desires that we have, to deactivate the things in our life which allow us or cause us to be involved with sin. If you have the King James translation, you'll see the word destroyed. The ASV says might be done away with. King James translation, I think, is probably a little more vivid there, but it does not mean annihilated. When we talk about dealing with sin, the lusts, the problems from it, sin has been robbed of its power. Christ did that. But there's still that temptation out there, as Don said. The devil made me do it. No, he didn't. You allowed yourself to be drawn into that lust, that desire, that temptation, and then from there you are responsible because you're the one that did it. Paul, as he talks about the loss of sin's power, he's going to use different words or different expressions in this book. He talked about that a little bit back in Romans 3 and verse 3. He talked about sin. It has no effect over us. 331, the same idea. Void, chapter 4 and verse 14, 7-2. And then we're discharged from sin. So when it comes to sin, it was powerful. Jesus comes. He goes to the cross. He takes the power out of sin. But we can still head back over into that territory, flirt with it, become involved with it as a Christian, and have some of the kinds of attitudes that we mentioned earlier, and that is not a good thing. When Paul talks about the body of sin being done away, that's at the end of verse 6. There are some other things he talks about as far as being done away with. He used that wording with the Old Covenant in 2 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 11, and that's one passage I think that's helpful. When we talk about the old covenant being done away with, what does that not mean? Do we still have it?
We still reference it.
Yeah, well, we still got it. If we can reference it, we still have it, right? So it's still in existence. God has not obliterated it. But it's lost its power in the sense that we are no longer under it. Well, that's what Paul says, sin. It's like that. Then you've got the same word being used in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and verse 8 when he said prophecy was done away with. We've still got the information as far as the prophecy, but we're not controlled by that. We've now got the New Testament. And it is that body of sin that God has broken the power for, but sometimes there is that desire to go back and be involved with it. The tool or the source, the power that releases us from sin? We've, I think, mentioned it a time or two, but what is it? What allows us to be freed from sin's grip? All right, that's it. Several passages, Revelation chapter 1 and verse 5, Romans chapter 5, verses 9 and 10. Without Jesus' sacrifice, we could not be freed from the power of sin. When we have the Lord's Supper every Sunday, I don't know what you think about. Hopefully, you're thinking about spiritual things when we have that part of our service. But one of the items that would certainly be appropriate would be, I can be here, I can honor God, and God will accept my worship because I have been freed from the power of sin. Jesus has broken that power in my life. I have been able to be freed from the shackles that the devil put me in spiritually, but that is still going to, once again, not completely insulate us. When you think about sin, you could look at a lot of different examples. The one that I picked is pornography. When you look at pornography, I think that you find almost every person in the world that is involved with it to some degree in today's world. Some statistics have said that about 60% of people who profess to be Christians are involved with it. Now, that's over half. That's a lot of folks when it comes to males. Now, when you look at that, and you could find something similar for women and talk about them, but I'm going to use the males since I'm a guy tonight. 60% of the people, God says, look, I have freed you from that, but still, when you think about guys, what's the temptation? You know, you pass by the magazine rack, and boy, you know, there's a lady that's half naked, you know. You know, the old eyes can be tempted to just run right over there and check it out. Or what happens on TV? I mean, you're just surrounded by the stuff. You're on Facebook, or you are on some other site which has some advertising, and there you go. There it is. And it's that pull back. For another person, it's not that. It is the alcohol that we talked about earlier. They see that. There's another person, they are addicted to drugs, and they're trying to come off that, but they know that there is a certain section of town that if they go down there, they can buy something that they want or need, and they're probably not going to be picked up by the police. So as they're out and about, what's a temptation? Rather than go this way home, we're going to just kind of go over there and just cruise the streets, right? You know, we're not going to stop. Well, what's that do? It puts you right there within the devil's grip. It puts you in temptation. And that's something, you can pick your poison or you can pick your sin. There are a lot of different things. There's some people drinking, drugs. Some people are controlled by smoking, foul speech, fornication, lying, cheating. You can just go down the list and say, well, this is my weakness. This is the thing where the devil has the best shot at trying to entrap me in sin. And it's going to differ from person to person. And it's real easy as we deal with sin. If you are talking with somebody and they say, this is a struggle for me, and this last week or yesterday or earlier today, I fell into this particular sin, it's really easy to jump on them and say, well, you know, I thought you were a Christian. I thought you were stronger. How on earth could that have happened to you? Well, before we go down that road, what did Jesus say? That old splinter, remember? Take the beam out of your eye, and that is way out there before you go trying to take care of the little speck of sawdust in the other person's eye. So be merciful to people, be kind to people, because we are in the same boat. For years, well, and I guess we've all had this experience, you hear some expression and you wonder about what it means. For years, I heard the expression, by the grace of God, go I. Anybody ever hear that? Anybody know what it means?
God kept me from doing that. Or by God's grace, I no longer have to do that or whatever.
Okay. That wasn't the explanation that I finally came out with. That could be the correct one. Brian?
I think that meant is if it weren't for God's grace in my life, I would be in the same situation as that person.
Yeah, I think that's more in line of what that expression means.
That's what I meant.
Okay. All right. That's what Marcia meant. You look at this particular person and you think, well, hey, they really have a messed up life. And maybe they do. But really, when you look at your life, what can you say about you? You're guilty of sin too, right? Now, in your eyes, your sin may not be as bad as, you know, his or hers or theirs. But still, you know, God has been merciful to that person. That person has some spiritual issues. God has been merciful to me. I still have some spiritual issues. And finally, one day, that kind of clicked. But I always heard that, and I always wondered what it meant. So in addition to some vanilla in the light bulbs, maybe that'll be helpful. You can have a better understanding of that expression. That's true.
So, I mean, it can be not only, like you say, the taking away of the sin, too, or like you were talking, but it can also be the physical part of the network.
That way. And we have to be so careful because it is so easy to be so critical. The devil is very clever. And that is an easy way. I mean, we're saying, okay, you know, we're not going to lie and cheat and steal and be unfaithful in all these areas. But I remember several years ago, over in Shipshawana, there at the, what's the big Amish place?
Minnehoff,
there we go, thank you. Watching a little video. Anybody over there watch a little video? Not, okay. They talked about the Amish, and this is not even really a loose paraphrase, but they were trying to make the point that the Amish oftentimes are perceived as being almost perfect people. I mean, they're not out there doing all the bad, you know, they're not stealing horses and, you know, they're not out there trying to cheat on farmland, those kinds of things. But they say they do have some other issues. They, for example, when it comes to a funeral, they're all going to make the same apple pie or, you know, you can't have a cherry pie and you can't have your cheesecake pie and all kind of dress the same. But still, even with that, even with all that sameness, they talked about the fact that there was envy in the group. You know, well, my apple pie was better than hers. My bonnet was knitted better than hers. Boy, look at the garden that they have. They've got weeds in their garden. Our garden is weed-free. And as they went through and made some of those points, that made an impression on me. Because you have this perception of people, in this case, folks who are trying to live the Amish lifestyle, and I believe that several of them are really trying to do what's good. You always have some scoundrels. But even with what seems to be everything in order as far as the house, it's just a different set of problems. Now, somebody might say, well, that envy over weeds in the garden, you know, that's definitely different than somebody who's lying all the time. Well, perhaps for us it is. But both are in the category of sin. Both are certainly sufficient to send you to hell and so forth. Now, having said all that, I want to come back and make the point that we were talking about, because we're not Amish. You see the street person, and it's very, very easy to say, well, he hasn't managed his money very well. This person is living paycheck to paycheck. This person never has a dime to their name. They're always asking money from me. And many of those things are true. And if a person is dishonest, we have, I think, the principle from the Thessalonian letter, if he's not willing to work, don't let him eat. So if a person is in that category, that's what God says about you. But for other people who may not manage as well as they could or should, or may not manage as well as we do, when you look at Scripture, again, by the grace of God, go I. That could be me, and there are going to be some times where, you know, we're going to, can we say, be extra generous or try to show some extra compassion just for that reason. But it's very, very easy to say, well, look, you know, we've got our house in order. They don't. Therefore, we're not going to do anything for them. Is that it? Gary and then maybe Tim.
Not to jump off topic or anything, but with the amount of publicity that the feminists get and how they a lot of times look down on us because of our belief in gender roles, is there a translation thing in the book? It says that our old man is crucified with him. And is that kind of meaning both sexes, or is that specifically talking about men? How would we respond to someone that points that out to us?
All right, I can check the word. I'm pretty sure that is anthropos. That would be the word for mankind versus male. I think it has to be that. There is a word for man on there, A-N-E-R. But I would almost bet my right arm that it's not that. But we can check that soon enough after class. Tim, did you have a thought or no?
I was just going to say that there's a difference between people who can't manage their affairs and people who do like the prodigal son and waste all their sustenance on riotous living on purpose. Now, they're looking for a good time no matter what. And then there's people that they just can't manage to.
Yeah.
I mean, there's certain affairs that, you know, they can maybe feed themselves, get dressed, things like that. But I mean, when it comes to things like finances or priorities, they just can't get it together. And if we're too hard on those people, the scripture says that if we don't show compassion, we're not going to get it. So we got to be pretty careful about who we pick on and why we pick on them, and if we're giving them a hand up.
Yeah, that is true. I try to be, and I've had some people criticize me over the years, but there are a lot of people out there who are liars and cheaters. And if you are a liar and cheater, chances are I'm going to catch you. And if I catch you, chances are you're not going to receive at least any recommendation from me for help or any help from me, because you're trying to scam me. And that puts you in a very distinct category. I think of that as casting pearl before swine. You're asking me to support someone who's a crook, basically. And I have no interest in doing that from either church funds or private funds. But if you're someone who is truly in need, then okay. All the cards are on the table. We will see what we can do for you. And there are some people who fall into that category. They just manage their resources poorly. They're not dishonest people. They're just bad managers. And that does put them into a very different category than the other. That it? Okay, let's talk about what we've got at the end of verse 6. Paul, as he talks about the struggle for sin, he talks about being in bondage to sin. That is, a slave to sin. Sin is your master. We have people recognize that in the world by talking about different addictions, and there are certainly many. Paul, as he uses that word bondage, he uses a present tense verb, and sometimes that verb is translated serve. He said, you serve sin. Now, I don't know about you, but most of the non-Christians that I find, I don't think they believe that. Do you? If they're not out there and they're not addicted, you know, anybody know what a carton of cigarettes costs? Yeah. I passed by a gas station today, and I saw the amount, and I thought, well, how much is that for, and what is that for? $60 a carton. Now, I've never smoked, but how long does it take to go through a carton for people? Anybody know? Moderate to heavy.
A week.
All right. So, $60 a week. Brian, you're our accountant. How much is that a year?
$31.20 a year.
All right. Very good. $31.20 a year. So you can imagine somebody's going through a little over $3,000. Literally, it's up in smoke. Would you say that that person is serving the cigarette? Are they in bondage? Well, they are. Now, they don't see it like that. They see that as this is enjoyment, this is recreation, this is something that relaxes me. And maybe all those things are true. Maybe you do feel like that is relaxing to you. But and it's not just that. I've given you the illustration before. I was in scouts with a guy, and I do not know how he drove, looking back on it. I was about 15, and the guy always had about 24 to 48 cans of Coke in a cooler and cigarettes that just seemed like they never stopped. And he was driving down the road, a cigarette in one hand and a Coke in the other, big old pickup truck. And I rode with him at different times. I was never scared, but I was always amazed at how he kind of balanced that. And then when it was time for another Coke, you know, he was able to reach over and get that, or maybe I helped him out there, but another cigarette. But that's what I remember. I can remember the guy's name, and he served the Coke. He served the cigarettes. He was in bondage to those things.
He probably viewed it that those things were serving him.
Yes.
The cigarette gave him pleasure. The Coke satisfied him. So he probably views it just the opposite, that those things are serving.
I'm sure that just about anybody in the world would make that argument. These things serve me. I'm able, you know, nobody's forcing me to spend my money on these things. I'm making my choice. But they were addictive for him. And that's true for a lot of other people as well. You may remember over in Matthew chapter 6 and verse 24, Jesus uses the same word. He said, a man cannot serve two masters. And one of those masters, if you're going to be on the right track, has to be God or Christ, and that is the only one that's allowed. Anything else, you start adding in some other masters, and Jesus says, you are on the wrong road. But the word is used to describe some other things. We can serve God, Acts chapter 20 and verse 19. We can serve idols, Galatians 4:8. We can serve, same word, desires of the flesh, Titus 3:3. And we can serve sin, Romans chapter 6 and verse 6. If we want to get off that road, if we are serving sin, how do we leave that road and say, that's behind us? How do we make the break with sin? Didn't Paul explain it in Romans 6, 1 to 4, Tim, and then Don?
You mean before you were...
Okay, you're serving sin. You're serving sin. You're not a Christian. How do you say, we're going to get off this road, we're going to stop, how are we going to break the power of sin? Romans 6, 1 to 4. All right, remember, we who did what? We who died to sin, right? We were then, well, okay, that's right. We're buried with Christ in baptism. That old man is buried, right? That connection to sin, we're saying that's broken. And then Romans 6, 4 and 5, we're raised up to walk in the newness of life. Our justification is simultaneous with the death to sin. That death to sin takes place in baptism. Therefore, that justification takes place in baptism. When Paul talks about this justification, he uses the present tense. We should know that. This is something that is ongoing. When we become a Christian, we are in that state. We continue to live. As a Christian, we walk in the light, and that justification continues. We stand in the grace of God, as we saw from Romans chapter 5 and verse 2. All right, anything else that you want to add or ask before we look at Romans 6, 8 to 11? Gary, and then Tim.
Just need to replace that sinful behavior with something that's good. If you have, you know, the old saying, idle hands are the devil's workshop. Well, that's true. If you sit around all day, pretty soon you're thinking about ways to get in trouble. Or you're thinking about things that will get you in trouble. But you see other people doing it, and then you start rationalizing it. Well, he's doing it. You know, they're doing it. And yeah. I could probably get by with nobody to see me doing it anyway. So
people do offer alternatives. And I grant that if you are trying to pick up one of those alternatives, it can be very, very difficult. But for example, the smoker. He says, okay, look, I'm addicted to the cigarettes. I've got to quit. So maybe he picks up a pencil and he's doing that, or maybe he begins to chew gum. There's something that he uses to distract him from the activity as far as putting the cigarette in the mouth. There is, like I say, maybe that pen, he can hold that and wiggle that around and chew on something. Or some people have resorted to something like snuff, which I don't think is probably the best alternative to cigarettes, but they say we got to get away from the smoke somehow, and they look for some replacement. But you're right. Jesus made that point as well in talking about the demon, Matthew chapter 12. He says the demon goes out, and it was swept and garnished, all ready for something good to come in. Nothing good came in, and the demon came back with some helpers, and that was not a good arrangement. So the bad has to be pushed out and replaced with something that's good, in this case, Christian living.
And some sins are easy for people that aren't Christians to see as sin. Smoking is not necessarily one of them. They think it's just for me. It's not bothering anybody. I'm not hurting anybody. My family's not going hungry. So that really takes a lot of mental power on their part to understand that it is sin before they can want to kill the old man.
Yeah. There are a lot of things. And I think as Christians mature in the faith, there are some things where they, in the later years, look at and say, it's going to be a little difficult, perhaps, for me to go ahead and actually say, okay, this is it, exactly, book, chapter, and verse. But after some seasoned study, after really trying to reflect on what the Christian life teaches, I've come to the conclusion that this behavior does not model well the Christian life and therefore should be avoided. Now, had you tried to make that case to them 30 years earlier, they would have said, oh no, this is perfectly fine. And maybe they were doing that and very supportive of it and arguing fervently for it. But as the years go by, sometimes people can become, for the lack of a better expression, more conservative. But in this case, I think probably better Bible students, better understanding of God's will, trying to draw closer to God, and therefore encouraging people, and certainly they themselves, shunning some behavior, which in the earlier years they might have said, this is perfectly fine. And I think smoking is one good example of that, where you've got some people who do it in the later years, and then as they, if not for health reasons later, sometimes it is health concern, doctors say you've got to put away the cigarettes, but there are Christians who look at that as time has gone by and say, look, that's just not a good model for me, you know, to try to be talking to someone, hey, Jesus Christ is great, let me light up again. It just, you know, there's some things in life that can be a little unseemly. And when you begin to think that through, that is one thing. Now, I've known some very committed Christians who have said, look, you know, we're smokers, we're struggling with that. We do our best to clean the clothes so nobody smells it on us when we come to services. And I think you have to respect that as well. But there are some things in life, and again, that to me is one of the most visible ones, where people oftentimes change their view as they get a little older in life. Don?
I assume from the conversation that you're saying that smoking is a sin.
I was saying that I think as people get older in the faith, I have seen a lot of them quit. They come to the conclusion that that is not the picture that they want to present of the Christian life. Now, we can go down through a number of activities and say, okay, is this going to be a sin? For example, you know, you can just kind of start, what about the cheerleader out there in skimpy, you know, a skimpy costume? What about going down to the beach? What about the male basketball player, you know, who doesn't have, you know, very much on? You know, good-looking basketball player can incite lust with some females at a basketball game. You can go down and ask about 1,000 different things. So when I have people talk to me about that, they're looking sometimes for a definite answer. Is this sin or not? If I do this, am I going to go to hell? Well, I think that is one way to look at it. But I do think that there's another way and a better way to look at that. And that is, look, are you trying to live the Christian life? Are you trying to draw as close to God as you can? Then look at the activities in your life that you would consider questionable or some things that you want to know about and ask, do these really seem to line up with the Christian life? And use that as your gauge rather than trying to find a preacher or an elder or somebody else who will give you a list and say, you know, this is in the sin column, this is not. Okay, I'm not sure I follow the question. Can you restate that?
Smoking is either a sin or not a sin, no matter what. Do you consider smoking a sin?
Judgment is individual.
Not that you're judging anybody.
Okay. Let's put it into a different category, Don, for just a second. Let's take drinking.
No, I'd rather take smoking.
Well, we will. We'll come back to that. But to deal with the smoking, we're going to have to deal with the drinking first. Is drinking a sin?
What's that?
Is drinking a sin?
Yes, I think it is.
Okay. All right, let's
drinking into the excess, yes.
Well, how do we define excess?
You get drunk.
Well, but what's drunk? I mean, states have different levels for the drunkenness. So which state do we use? Well, but what's mental impairment?
What?
What's mental impairment?
When you don't know what you're doing.
Oh, okay, but where do you reach that standard? You know, how do you know, give me a definitive standard where you say you can drink up to this point and then you're intoxicated and you sin? What level of impairment? Does that mean as long as you can stand on one foot, you're not intoxicated?
Okay, let me ask you this. Qualifications for elders, what does it say about strong drink?
I think you have there, when you think about elders and deacons, not given to much wine,
right,
is how that is word. Literally, that means somebody who is not beside the bottle. Now, again, what does that mean? Not beside the bottle. That sounds to me like someone who wants to be very far away from it, which is what I was talking about earlier, as far as you have some of these activities where people say, well, look, how far, you know, if you're the school bus driver, How far do you want to get to the edge, or how close do you want to get to the edge before you run the bus off the mountain? If your child is on the bus, how far, you know, do you say, okay, as long as you're within 6 inches of the edge, you can drive my child? I gave you two. You didn't want to answer either of mine.
Jesus said your body is a temple, right?
Yeah.
And we shouldn't defile it.
Yes.
Okay. The other way I can think that you could say that smoking is a defiling in your body. And if that's the case, if that's the standard for a sin, then when I go out and eat a hamburger, and I eat a hamburger every day, and it's loaded with cholesterol, I know what cholesterol does. Is that a sin?
Yeah. Again, you're getting back here to the question. I had a lady ask me about her kid, her child one time. He chewed snuff. And she said, what do you think? She didn't like my answer, but I gave her 2 Corinthians 7, verse 1. Having therefore these promises, beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all defilement of flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God. Now that to me seems easy enough to understand. Going back to the school bus illustration, all right, God, how far can I get over here to the edge with things that are sinful? He says, I want you to seek holiness. I want you to seek safety. I don't want you to see how far you can get to the edge. Well, what does that mean? Well, if I'm going to be an elder or a deacon and I'm not going to be beside the bottle, that means that illustration as far as how close can I get to the cliff, I want to be over here. If I'm a smoker, I want to be over here. If I'm thinking about my health, I'm not going to be perfect. You know, I'm going to have some jelly beans. I'm going to have some Twinkies at times. I'm going to have some other stuff at times. It's probably not the best. I'm not always going to make the perfect decision in some areas. But hopefully, as I grow as a Christian, as I mature, there are going to be some things where I was pretty close over here to the edge. And through personal study, prayer, teaching, better commitment to God, I have moved away from the edge little by little by little. And if we can encourage people to do that, we'll answer, I think, all these questions. Rather than try to come up with a list, as some have. You know, there are some congregations where before they have a gospel meeting, they would send a list of questions to preachers. And some of those questions, I mean, they may send 200 or 300 questions. And they would say, well, do you believe this? Do you believe this? Do you believe this? And unless the preacher answered correctly, quote-unquote, on all those questions, they would not have him for a meeting. They certainly are within their right to do that. But we don't want to bind where God is not bound, and we don't want to loose where God is not loosed. But 2 Corinthians 7:1 for me is a very, very helpful passage. You start edging closer and closer to Jesus. And if you're doing that, you're doing what's right. And for these areas, everybody has some areas where they're a little closer to the edge of the cliff than others. We all are. So whether you want to take that in the area of food, whether you want to take that in the area of some things that people are doing to the body, we don't support those kinds of things as far as saying, well, yeah, hey, that's great, that's good. But if you want to take smoking, you can go back prior to a lot of the studies that were done. People smoked and didn't have the information that we have now. And if you're going to say, well, that's a sin and that's going to condemn you, then what about those people? You have to, I think, answer that as well. Then you have some other questions, too, and thankfully we're not in this particular situation.